the sun is shining and all of my favorite plant friends are popping up right now. Speaking of plants, what are you growing this year? Do you know? Do you know what kind of medicine will be in your garden? Or are you still trying to figure it out? Totally okay if you're still trying to figure it out. We're all growing and learning on this journey, right? But if you want some help, I do have a family medicine garden guide. It's basically 10 essential herbs that I feel like every mom needs to know and grow in their yard. I give you some growing tips and ways that you can use it as medicine, and it's totally free. So if you want that, I'm going to pop a link in the show notes here for you to grab it and get your hands digging in the dirt and growing incredible medicine for you and your family. Hello, and welcome to The Herbalist Path, a podcast where you'll discover how to make your own herbal remedies at home so that you can take better care of yourself, better care of your family, and better care of our planet. I'm Mel. I'm a clinical herbalist, environmental educator, and mountain living mama with this crazy passion for teaching more mamas and their little loves how to use plants as medicine in a safe, effective, and tasty way so that there can be an herbalist in every home again. It's an absolute honor to have you on the journey down the herbalist path with me so that together, we can make herbalism. Hashtag spread like wildflowers. Welcome to another episode of The Herbalist Path. I am really, really excited for today's guest and really grateful to one of our mutual students, Jennifer Shaw, who runs her own little herbal product company called Pink Lotus Herbs. But I have Maria Noel Groves with me here today. She is an author, a brilliant herbalist, an educator. She runs Wintergreen Botanicals. I have her book and met her on her first book tour in Oregon with Body Into Balance, an herbal guide to holistic self-care. And I'm just so excited to get to connect with you again. And again, grateful that Jennifer kind of initiated this happening. So welcome to The Herbalist Path.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you also to Jennifer for connecting us.
Yeah, it's so cool. So she's talked about how amazing you are and how wonderful your courses are and how you are great to learn from and you're a barrel of herbal information. And I am so curious to hear about little herbal Maria and how you got your start in the herbal world, or like what brought you here.
Yeah, we can definitely chat about that. And I want to thank you too for all the kind words that you just shared. And Jennifer has also said really wonderful things about you and your classes. And I always think it's really cool when I get to share a student amongst multiple herbal programs, because it's just really fun to interact with other herbalists in that way. And so how I got started, you know, since you said little Maria, I'll actually go a little different into the story that I normally give for my start, because I do have a couple of different I call origin stories because I'm a superhero fan. My childhood experience was that I was one of those kids who got to play in nature, in the woods. You know, I was always out playing with things. My mother actually has a picture of me out picking wildflowers. And I didn't grow up in a household that specifically was growing herbs or using herbal medicine or natural medicine. But my mother is definitely holistically minded. And as time went on, she started to get more interested in those topics. So she's a nurse. At one point in time, she actually wanted to be a midwife. She's an OB nurse. She wanted to be a midwife and go to the farm, which is a very iconic place. If folks know about midwifery, the farm was a major place. And she was going to learn to be a midwife. And then she got pregnant with me. And that sort of disrupted her plan. So she ended up sticking with the more nurse, OB nurse thing. But she's always been into having a garden and being interested in nature. And so as she started to play with herbs, she got the book, The Magic and Medicine of Plants, with the Reader's Digest. She was a big Reader's Digest fan. So I don't know if anybody else who grew up in the 80s is familiar with that book, but she had it. My aunt had it. They loved it. I remember looking through it as a kid, just thinking, how cool is it that this birch tree that I like to play in could potentially ease pain? It was like the plants themselves had superpowers. But it wasn't until later, when I was in college, that I actually started to really learn about herbal medicine and then started to apply it in my own life when I had stuff come up. And then it was all about herbs. And once I was in that space in college, I really started diving headfirst into it. But my mother was also getting interested in herbs at the same time. She had been at some of her childbirth instructor classes and ended up meeting Deb Sewell, who runs Avena Botanicals in Maine, and bought her book that on women's herbs that had come out and gave that to me as a gift. And I think that would be my first good quality herbal that I owned. I had had a couple herb books that I got first in college that later I donated to a used bookstore because they turned out to not be the best quality of herb books. But Deb's book was one of the first really good ones. And from there, it just kept going.
It does keep going, right? Yes. I love that story. And I love hearing that your mom was a nurse and very interested in those kinds of things. I see more and more and more nurses all of the time using and learning more about plant medicine. And I absolutely love seeing the allopathic world and the herbal world and holistic healing world merge together more and more and more. I think it's so incredibly important. And I love that she wanted to go to the farm. I absolutely know what the farm is. Is beautiful. And I also love that she encouraged so much nature connection for you as a young child, being out there picking the wildflowers and exploring, and that you at that age had the wonderment in your brain to recognize that, oh, this birch tree can help relieve pain or what have you with the help of some books. I think that's absolutely beautiful. So did you have any particular herb as you were starting in your journey that gave you that first holy moly, this is real, or wow, this actually works, or something along those lines?
I have a couple different stories. I actually just shared the story of wintergreen on another podcast, but I won't repeat that particular story, but I'll say we'll go into lemon balm, because that anybody who knows me probably knows that I love lemon balm. Same. I love how accessible it is. It's just such an easy plant to grow, and it's such amazing medicine. I work with a lot of it in the clinic and also work with it personally. But the reason how I got into that herb was it is one of the first herbs that my mom bought when she had her garden, and she decided to start playing with herbs. At the time, one of my cousins was living at the house too, and her name was Melissa. And so the only reason my mother picked out the plant was, she's like, oh, isn't this cool? This plant's name is Melissa. So we'll get it for the garden. And so that ended up being one of the first herbs that, as I did start to dive into herbalism and start making medicine and playing with medicine, that was definitely one of the first few plants that I started to play with, because it was a great plant, helpful for stress and anxiety, definitely things that I personally deal with, but also just it was there in the garden and abundant and easy to work with. And so making tinctures, which is still one of my favorite ways to work with it. And then also doing teas. I love drying it and making tea. And it's still one of my favorite ones to connect people with, because as I'm sure you know, from your garden and really carefully handled lemon balm remedies have such amazing quality compared to what's commonly available in commerce. So, you know, in class, we'll make tinctures and things, and then later students will report back that, you know, they ran out and they decided to go to the store. And there are a lot of great herb companies out there that I would generally say, oh yeah, if you need to, this company's great, this company's great. But when it came to lemon balm, everybody reported back that no matter what they were, whether it was for digestion or stress or sleep, or some of them were using it to support themselves when they were dealing with cold sores, everybody was like, everything I buy doesn't work. Like I have to go back and like do the homemade fresh plant, high proof alcohol tincture where you really shove in the jar with lots and lots of herbs and it's fresh. And it's also not just that the herb is fresh, but that the tincture itself is still relatively newly made because it is one of those ones that I feel like starts to lose its potency after a few years. And the same thing with dried herb too. I don't feel like the dried herb has quite as much punch of medicine as the fresh plant does, but it's still really delightful as a tea. And it's one of my favorite tea herbs. And it's one that I never buy it at any of the bigger bulk suppliers, even though I'll get other things from those places, but it's just not great quality. So if I happen to run out of my own, which is always like the best of the best that I can get, there are farms that I'll go to. And even some years from some farms, I get it. And I'm like, like maybe not quite as good as I was hoping it would be. But Oshala Farm has been one of the places. It's become my like my next go-to. If I run out of my own, they're like Oshala Farm's my next pick because they're just so gentle with their plants. And that's so nice for a plant like lemon balm.
Oh my gosh. I love that you chose lemon balm. Everything you were saying, I'm like, ooh, I can so relate to all of these things. I'm also a Melissa. So I have been called Mel since I was about 10. And then I remember at one point in my herbal growing journey, and I ran a product line that had my name in it. And I felt really insecure about having my name in it because I didn't want people to think I was a egotistical jerk. And turns out they didn't. But for a while, I was like, well, maybe I'll just sign off as Melissa, which nobody calls me Melissa, but I love lemon balm so much. And I was like, well, it makes perfect sense. It didn't last long, but I love that your mom bought it because its name was Melissa. And I want to just talk about that quality difference in herbs. Quickly, I want to interject and add to your story with Oshala Herb Farms when, and I share this with my students as well, but when I was running my herbal product line, sometimes I would get herbs from Oshala or they would be out and I would get herbs from another really fantastic and high quality farm that's right down the road from them that I know Jeff, the farmer at Oshala, actually was mentored by. And I'll get a bag of lemon balm from each one. And the difference in quality from Oshala is out of this world different. The color of the green in their lemon balm, the fact that they leave the leaves pretty darn whole still, so you're keeping all of those aromatics in there as long as possible. You open that bag and the aroma and fragrance of lemon balm permeated my whole little warehouse. And then I would look at this other farm, great farm again, organically grown, just miles down the road from them. And their lemon balm was kind of a grayish color. And the smell was like, it's kind of lemony, meh. And just that is so beautiful. Like, kudos to Elise and Jeff and all the love and work they put on their farm. And have you been to their farm yet?
I have not been to their farm. I think next time I head out to Oregon, whenever that may be, I will have to try to see if I can swing by if they're having an open house or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would be great. But I have seen them talk on various interviews and things in the herbal community. And I guess one of the things that they do is that they keep the herbs in their whole dried form and then they don't garble it and they very minimally garble it basically right before your order is sent, mm-hmm. which is completely unheard of. The amount of storage space they must need to keep all of those whole dried plants, you know, stored. I mean, they take up so much more space that way, right. But it's working. And it was funny because we got in some of the stinging nettle and
you actually get
I was
stung.
Placing an order. And I love getting nettle from some of the big suppliers. Sometimes I actually like the big suppliers even more for stuff too. And nettle is one of those plants that I do really like, but I got some from them and it was still stinging mm-hmm. because it was so minimally handled and so quality dried that we were shocked. They're like, oh my goodness. It's like, and then so now I'll occasionally bring a stem of it out and like pass it around like, hey, you can actually sting yourself with this dry nettle, which is really cool. So it probably has some extra medicinal value that would come from that stinging property that you wouldn't normally get from a dried nettle because most dried nettle doesn't sting.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that's so funny that you say that one too, because when I did run my tea company and I had people
making teas for me. They're like, are we working with nettles today? Is it from Oshala? Oh no. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it still stings. This is amazing. And they're like, but I don't like it, you know, but yeah, that's such a great testament to their quality. And it really speaks to the quality of the medicine that you bring in. I know that a lot of people ask me all the time where to get herbs. I'm like, well, number one, if you can grow them, you grow your own. If you cannot grow them, find yourself a local organic herb farmer. If you cannot find one of those, definitely go to Oshala. I know there's other great herb farmers out there as well, but I'm in Oregon and they're in Oregon, so that works out well. And then you go to the bigger organic suppliers. Like, I love Mountain Rose. They're fantastic. I've toured all their facilities and I see the quality and standards and ethics they put behind everything. But still, when you can grow your own and get that energy into your plant medicine that you just can't get from a bulk supplier. So
yeah, I completely agree. And we do have some really great growers in New Hampshire that I love too. They're on a more micro scale, but they're still great. So like Misty Meadows is my favorite herb shop in the state, and they grow a lot of their own herbs with impeccable quality. And then we've got Terra Basics, which is like a teeny tiny company, but her quality is generally excellent. And then we have a few bigger farms throughout, especially Maine and Vermont, like Foster Farm Botanicals, Zach Woods, Avena yeah. Botanicals. You know, there's so many. There are several more that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head, but we do have a lot of really great herb farms locally as well.
And it's so important, like just economy wise, to support those people. Like, those people work so hard to make incredible medicine that is going to work better than the stuff you can buy on the store shelves. It's truly amazing. So I love that you brought that up. It gets me giddy talking about farmers and things like that. So if our listeners were able to grow their own medicine, I know you talked about lemon balm and nettles, but most of the listeners here are mamas and some are not. That's fine too. If they were to grow their own, what herbs would you say are most important for them to grow? Like top three.
Maybe. Well, I'll definitely share my top three. I'm not a mama, so I don't have as much of you would definitely be the expert when it comes to kids safe stuff. I know some things, but I don't have a lot of the
mom's got to nourish themselves there. Too. So,
but I would say holy basil is definitely among my favorites. And I feel like I have heard you crush on holy basil in some of your other podcasts too. And I know you've interviewed Bevan Cohen and like a big fan of holy basil as well. We did a shared podcast with a couple of herbalists and all four of us were like, holy basil. Oh. It's just such a nice plant. Yeah. So, you know, thank you to the folks of India and Africa and other, you know, Central America and other places for where the holy basil species tend to come from. And the one that I work with is the one that's sometimes called Kapoor or temperate tulsi that is actually seems like it's from Africa, from what I gather. It's probably truly the Osmum Africanum Latin name, even though it's often called Sanctum or Tenor Florum or one of the more standard holy basils, but it grows really, really well in the garden. And so that's the one that we grow here. I've grown a couple of the other ones and they just don't thrive as well. And I love that particular holy basil. And so make tinctures, we'll do really anything you want to make with holy basil, fresh or dried when you're working. It's another one where having it direct from your garden or the farm is really nice. But whether you're working with it fresh or dried, you can do anything with it. But I'd say I most often really love working with it as a tea because it's so delicious and it's a great stress relieving herb. And it's just got this nice sort of elevating but calming quality, although different people will respond differently. So some students will say, oh, it revs me up. I can't sleep if I have holy basil. And then other folks say, oh my gosh, I was so relaxed. I felt high. I wouldn't want to do that at work. So it's really different in my experience, depending upon the person, but I love combining it with lemon balm as a tea. And that is definitely one of my go-tos when the stress is high. Go for a walk in the woods whenever I can. And also having a cup of tea of that. And then in the summertime, I'll take the fresh herbs and shove them into cold water or seltzer. And that's a go-to for me. Or when I do have clients in the clinic, a lot of times that'll be like my quick grab tea of choice to share with a client, because most people will enjoy that and benefit from those qualities.
Yeah, I know when I make a tea blend for my daughter, if there's Tulsi involved, she's going to love it. So that's really nice.
Yeah. No one herb is perfect for everybody. And I have definitely met a few people for whom they're just like, nope, like it's too much aromatics. It's too airy. Just not quite the right plant for them. But for me, it is definitely one of my favorites.
I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
I love this time of year. It's spring, the sun is shining, and all of our beautiful plant friends are popping up. It's amazing. Unless, of course, you're one of the millions of people who suffer from seasonal allergies. You know, the itchy, watery eyes, the sneezing and wheezing that's straight miserable. Thankfully, there are some amazing herbs that can help you with all of that. Just like the herbs inside of Kick-Ass Allergy from Wish Garden Herbs, one of my absolute favorite herbal companies out there. Kick-Ass Allergy, yes, I said ask without the K at the end. Anyways, this formula has yerba santa, nettles, echinacea for that immune support, and orange peels, all which come together to help dry up those excessive mucosal secretions. Yep, I'm talking about the sniffles and the stuffy nose, the watery eyes, and all that jazz. This blend also acts as a great expectorant and can help ease the swelling and inflammation in those mucosal tissues. It is a top go-to for seasonal allergies. And get this, they combine all those beautiful herbs with glycerin, so it actually tastes pretty darn good. Or should I say, it tastes kick-ass, without the K at the end. Anyways, if allergy season is miserable for you and you want a natural remedy that actually works for those itchy eyes and being all sneezy and wheezy, you have got to check out Wish Garden Herbs Kick-Ass Allergy. And for those of you with the little kiddos, no sweat, they've got a kick-it allergy too. And you pregnant mamas? You don't have to suffer either. They've got a kick-ass allergy formula just for you. So head over to wishgardenherbs.com or check out the link in the show notes and go grab yourself some kick-ass allergy so you can enjoy spring again.
Yeah, I love it so much. And I also have students that are like, nope, Tulsi is not for me at all. And that's okay. And I'd love to hear, like, we still have a couple more herbs to put in the garden from you, but you did bring up on how some of your students felt really calm and some people felt really wired and how herbs are different for each body. Can you just share a little bit about like why that might be? Or
you know, I don't have an exact answer as to why. I mean, some of it might be on a genetic level, like what the mutations of our genetics are and how we metabolize different constituents. So that could certainly be part of it. But then also we have where we're coming out of, you know, our own energetics in our body. So are we hot, dry, cold, damp, airy, grounded, watery, you know, all those qualities. And the plants also have qualities. And especially if you have a quality, let's say that airy quality, and the plant also has a really airy quality, sometimes that might actually be sort of aggravating and pushing you too far into a particular direction, or one that might be even easier for some folks to grasp if they're new to the concept of energetics might be heat. And so, you know, somebody who's really, really hot and they feel hot and they're sweaty and they're, you know, everything's red and hot and inflamed and all that, sometimes those folks are not going to do well with an herb like ginger, which is so clearly very warming. They might find it too agitating to that red hot inflamed state that is their body. And where somebody who's really cold and constricted and achy, you know, might be the person who really benefits from that relaxing, opening, warming energy of the ginger. So I think the energetics can play a role. Where you are in your nervous system can play a role. So somebody who is already really sluggish and depressed might be more easily aggravated by herbs that are more, have more of a sluggish, relaxant, depressant quality to them. So like the stronger sedating herbs, for example. Meanwhile, somebody who's already pretty like wired and anxious and all of that, you know, might find anything with the slightest possibility of stimulation to just throw them into overdrive. And I can definitely, I especially am more apt to experience that since I'm a more high wired kind of person, and I would say that ashwagandha is another herb that probably even more so than holy basil, I find is a bit persnickety in how people respond to it. And so some people find it deeply relaxing and nourishing and rebuilding. And then other folks take it and it just, you know, agitates and stimulates them and they can't sleep and they're super anxious. And some people get just a little bit of a boost and maybe they can't take it before bedtime, but they're great with a small dose of it in the morning. So everybody's different. And as you know, one of the best things to do is, you know, do your research, listen to your body, but then try small amounts, start with a low dose, build up and see how it actually responds in your body and have that time to get to know your plants one-on-one so that you can really get a feel for whether that herb resonates and what exactly it does in your body. Do you have any additional, like, is there anything I missed there and reasons why?
You nailed it, for sure. And I love the explanations. And I just feel like this is something really, really important to talk about because more often than not, I get so many people that are reaching out to me. What herb do I take for this? And I'm like, babe, there's so much to consider. And you just talked about how many things we do need to consider. Of course, there is more. And you're right. Start with an herb and do that low dose. Get to know that herb. Pay attention. Is it the right herb for you? Because it's okay if it's not. And so, yeah, I just think that making more and more people aware that blanket herbalism, I would say maybe is the way to put it, is not necessarily the way to go about it if you're really looking to have plant medicine work as great as it can for you and recognize that you're unique and the plants are too. And that's great. That's the fun of it all. So yeah, such important stuff. So thank you for those answers for sure. Oh,
yeah. And I totally get it too. You know, when you're new, you have to start somewhere. So I used to be a magazine writer. That I have a degree in journalism and I used to be an editor for Natural Health Magazine. And so I would often do there, you know, once a year, we do like a quick herb guide, but it's magazine. So it's always very, you know, very quick and very topical. I love magazines. It's still a great way to just sort of entry into things, but we would take a topic and it might be like 30 topics and what's your key herb for this and what your key herb for that. And I would have these discussions when I would interview herbalists and they would get a little bit frustrated because as we just discussed, there's so much nuance as far as what herb is going to be right. You know, what herb's right for a cough? Well, what kind of a cough is it? What kind of a person is it? You know, there's a lot of variety and there's a pro and con to both of those things. Cause sometimes it's like, yes, but we just need to get the conversation started. Mm-hmm. And definitely there are a lot of factors that are gonna go in, but just everybody needs some place to start. And then you just keep diving deeper and deeper and deeper and learning that nuance or working with a practitioner who can go through that nuance with you, which is also pretty amazing when people have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said. Ooh, I want to hear your other two herbs, but now I'm so curious to hear about your journey from journalism over to herbalism. And
so do you want me to go back to the herbs and then we can chat about journalism?
Yeah, let's do the herbs since we were there. Yeah.
So let's see. Those are my easiest answers, the lemon balm and the holy basil. So let's see what else do I love? Well, Korean licorice mint is a plant that is lesser known and it's very closely related to Anise hyssop. I've been sort of on a journey to try to figure out like, how do you know if it's Anise hyssop or Korean licorice mint in your garden? Because they're so similar. They're really difficult to tell. And I have come to the conclusion that I think they hybridize a lot. I've seen them hybridize in my own yard. And so I suspect that most of the seed that's on the market for these two plants is kind of varied and very similar, but will will just kind of be a bit of a mix. And so Agastache rugosa is the Korean licorice mint, and Agastache funiculum is the anise hyssop. The ones that I like and the ones that were on the property when I first moved here are the ones that have that softer fennel kind of like honey flavor to them. They're just so delicious, really beautiful, like purple spikes of flowers. Very easy to grow, loves to self-seed. It's in the mint family, but it doesn't grow via underground runners like the mints. It more just self-seeds. And it's very easy to pull them out or move them around if they pop up where you don't want them. But I love them because they're beautiful. They're delicious. I'll throw them into seltzer with a little vanilla extract and it tastes like root beer. I love working drying it and working with it as tea. And I don't understand why, you know, if any herb farms are listening, like, please start growing and selling these plants more, because they're easy to grow, they're easy to dry, they keep pretty well, they taste absolutely delicious and are naturally sweet. I don't understand why they're not more commonly sold in commerce and available. But so that's one of my favorites. And anise hyssop's really good too. I find that the anise hyssops that I've compared to the Korean licorice mints, and at least the ones that I've had access to, have been a little bit more of a sharper, mintier flavor that is okay, but I don't like it as much as that softer honey fennel flavor. And unfortunately, the seed company where mine came from no longer sells it. So I'm on the lookout for someplace that sells seeds that have similar quality, but I haven't found one yet. So that's definitely a really fun one. And there are a few seed sources out there. I just can't say which one for sure. There is a farm in Michigan. Oh gosh, now I'm going to forget it. Let's see if I can find it.
Bevan would probably know it pretty well.
I sent seeds. So there, I sent seeds to a bunch of people. I collect though. I don't normally collect seeds. I'm not a seedling person. Let's see, heart.
This is great because I've never heard of this herb. So
yeah, I know Heartwood Forest Farm in Michigan.
Heartwood
Forest? Yeah, in Michelin. Heartwood Forest Farm. Patty is the farmer there. So I did send seeds to her, and she was already growing anise hyssop. And so we were chatting at the Great Lakes Herb Fair a couple of years back. And so she was interested. And so I sent her a bunch of seeds. And so I believe she does now sell the dried herb, the seeds, and the plants, depending upon, you know, what her availability. So that would be the go-to person, since I don't sell
right
herbs. I don't sell seeds. I don't sell plants. If people are local, I'll give them plant babies. But unfortunately, I was keeping some of my less favorable anise hyssop plants alive to like show people, look at the big difference between these two. And then just before the pandemic, I didn't think to cut back the anise hyssop before it flowered, and it interbred with my Korean licorice mint. And also I lost my sense of smell and taste to COVID early in the pandemic, and it's mostly back now, but it was really wonky for all, like 2 years. It's still not 100% perfect, but so it made it really hard to be able to assess and like weed out the ones I didn't like as much. So now I feel like my seed stock, while it's still good and I share them, it's not quite the really delicious one that I think Patty probably has access to.
Oh, well, that's exciting. I'm glad you sent it to her so she can cultivate it. Yes. And make it more available to people. And I'll definitely look her up and link to that in the show notes as well, in case anybody is excited to get Korean licorice mint.
I was so fortunate because the previous owner of the home, wasn't the only reason we bought the home, but one of the reasons that we bought it was there were already herbs here. It turned out the previous owner, who had been here for almost 30 years, did Reiki and was into the fairies and flower essences. And so there was already a ginkgo tree and golden seal plants. And that was my introduction to the Korean licorice mint. And she would start a lot of her own plants. And so she got a lot of less common things because she would get the seeds and start them. So that was just really fortunate. And we've kept in touch over the years, just a really sweet woman. So
that's beautiful and a magical story. I love that when you get to have that deep connection to the land that you've purchased and know that somebody has loved it so much ahead of time. And now you get to bring your version of love to the land. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. So lemon balm, Korean licorice mint, and tulsi, holy basil. Mm. I love all of those. You have a tasty, tasty herb garden for these people to start with.
Yes. And I actually, I was talking with Ji Ling Lin, who does some podcasts and whatnot. And her in-laws actually live close by. So she was able to come to the garden last year. And she's like, all mint family plants. I'm like, yeah, I guess I have a thing for mint family.
I love that. That's beautiful. I love the mints too. There's so much good medicine among them and so many ways that they can be utilized, and they're easy to grow and they're often very tasty. So yeah, I love those aspects of it. That's great. So tell me, how did you go from journalism? I guess maybe interviewing a bunch of herbalists could have inspired you to journey down the herbal world from there, but I'd love to hear about it.
That was very helpful for sure in my herbal learning. So I was getting my journalism degree when I started working with herbs. I had a sort of traumatic event, and then I was already starting to play with herbs a little bit and learn about them, but I hadn't started taking them. And so then I went to my local herb shop. They hooked me up with some relaxing herbs, some kava, some valerian, pretty typical for that time period in the 90s. And so then I was really into herbs once I had seen how they worked on my body and I really loved them. I started just learning more. I got a natural food store job and started learning more there. And then when I graduated, I was looking for opportunities and I ended up becoming an intern at Natural Health Magazine, which I'm in New Hampshire, and Natural Health was in Boston at the time. And they don't exist anymore. Most of my print magazines no longer exist. The past few years haven't been super kind to them, but they did then. And so I got a job as an intern in the research department. So I did fact checking. And then the person who ran the fact-checking department moved on to something else. And I ended up being able to jump up into the supervisor research editor role. So that's where I learned how to dig into the science and all that. But I also got to fact check. So I got to contact different folks to say, like, did you say this? Did you say that? You know, look at the studies. Did the study really match up to what the author had written? You know, and just every single thing we wrote in those articles had to have some sort of backup. And it was my job first as an intern and then running the department to make sure that that backup matched up. And because I loved herbs, they were kind enough to start feeding me a lot of the herbal related articles. So I ended up covering the herb beat. So, you know, in journalism, we call them the beat. So often it's the crime beat, the, you know, this beat, the that beat, but there it was the herb beat versus nutrition or yoga or whatever. And so it was such an amazing opportunity. For about 2 years, I got to get a free copy of almost every herb book that came out. And this was right around 2000, which is when a ton of great herb books came out. So my herbal shelves got filled up. I got to interview so many different herbalists that I deeply admire and just ask them, you know, for the sake of the article, but I could pretty much ask them whatever I wanted that related to the article. And it was just such a great opportunity. So I interviewed folks and then, and I was still, I guess I was not working at the natural food store at that point in time, but I did love the natural food store work too. And then I just didn't love working in a cubicle and I missed that connection with people directly that I had working in the natural food store. And I decided to go do some other things for a little bit to connect outside of cubicle work for a bit. And I was still freelancing and they let me do an article on how to become various different kinds of holistic practitioners. And so I got to interview folks on osteopathy, naturopathy, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, all sorts of really good, cool things. There might've been some energy work in there too, including of course, herbs. And that was the eye-opening moment for me to realize, for some reason, it didn't dawn on me interviewing herbalists, but that I was like, oh, I could actually become an herbalist. Like that could be my job. And once I got that idea in my head, I was like, well, yes, that's definitely what I want to do. And so I ended up, I had interviewed Michael Moore and I knew from that he was a bit of a rambler, but I also knew that he was also a genius with these great like ways to set up the plants. And I knew that he had an herbal program in the Southwest and I love the Southwest. So I ended up enrolling in herb school with him. That was like still another year or so out. also I did a more beginner program with Nancy Phillips in Northern New Hampshire, which was amazing, Nancy and Michael. And then I signed up for another program right after Michael's, doing an advanced program with Rosemary Gladstar and guest teachers in Vermont. So it was just a sort of like quick run of like a couple big programs, each one for a year, while doing side jobs, freelance. I started working at natural food stores again so that I could have a MIC job that I could do while I was moving around the country. And then in 2007 is when I actually launched my practice full time.
Oh, I love that. That's a long, drawn out story. That's a fun story. What an awesome opportunity to write for natural health. Like, I used to subscribe to it, so I read your articles, whether I knew it or not. And at that point in time, I had no idea that I was going to become an herbalist. So what a fun journey. And I love that you learned with Michael. It seems to me that like all of the best herbalists today learned with Michael. All of my teachers learned with Michael. I did not, but I sure have a lot of his books and a lot of lessons passed down, we'll say, for sure. So that's beautiful. I think that it's such a gift to be able to learn from so many different herbal educators, because there's so many different ways to approach it. And yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
It was a tremendous honor. I would say, I mean, there's so many great herbalists who didn't train with Michael as well.
Right, of course.
But you're on the West Coast, whereas here on the East Coast, there aren't as many people who, you know, knew about or traveled down to go teach, to go study with Michael. But mm-hmm. Rosemary Gladstar is one of our huge, I mean, I think she's a huge influence of herbalism across the
of
whole
of everybody.
Country. She's
yes.
been in different places, but she's been in for Vermont for so long that I think almost every single herbalist in New Hampshire and the Northeast has studied with Rosemary in some way or another. And it's been a very formidable experience.
Yeah, she's such an amazing being. Just her presence is so incredibly beautiful. I don't get very starstruck often, but I was at Brighton Bush one year with my teas, and I remember sitting with Rosemary and her sipping my tea and saying she loved it. And I was like, like, that was everything to me at that moment. So it was really, really a lovely time. And she is such an amazing being. What a gift that she is to the world and to the plant world, and making the awareness so big. And I feel like that's such an important mission.
Definitely.
Yeah.
She's such an amazing, I mean, as you're saying, she's just such an amazing, bright, shining, always kind, always supportive human being, and how she does everything, especially herbalism. Of course, she's a great herbalist too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not as nice of a person as Rosemary is, for sure. I think she handles her stuff better than I sometimes handle my stuff, but she's been such an inspiration to think of, you know, sort of to get that inspiration of the kind of energy that I hope to put out in the world, and to really try to focus on kindness as one of the core pieces, even though I don't always have to be nice. I don't always have to be kind, but there's so much more good that we can do in the world when we're putting that positive energy out. And I really appreciate her for setting that example. And when I took classes with her, it was just so fascinating to watch her handle complicated issues with such grace and ease and such kindness. So it was pretty amazing to watch, and continues to be, because of course she's still around and doing amazing work.
Yeah, the kindness is so beautiful with her. And it is a challenge to be that way in today's world. And I'm like, you know, obviously she has a few years on us, and that wisdom really rolls with her. And yeah, the kindness is beautiful, for sure. I love that. So you started your practice in 2007. You're an author, you're an educator, you do so much yourself in the world of herbalism and helping there be more people that are using plant medicine out there. I'd love for you to share a bit about what you do from your clinical practice, from your books, from your programs, people being able to learn with you more if they want mm-hmm. to.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely. I have my two books, Body into Balance and Grow Your Own Herbal Remedies. And there's a third book in the works. And that'll probably be out in spring of 2024. I can't really talk about what it's about yet, but we'll be able to say later this winter. I do see clients. That's something that ebbs and flows depending upon how much time and space I have in my practice to be able to devote to new clients. Because I do clinical work as well.
On a rare occasion, one of those that I'm like, I can take on a few clients, but right now my main focus is education and spending time with my child.
That's totally fair. And I love teaching. That's my favorite thing to do. But, you know, as you are saying, it's a lot of work to work with clients and they deserve so much time and focus in order to really be supportive of folks. And so sometimes I have more time for that and sometimes I don't, but I've been working lately to start to work with clients again and then teaching. So
Back up just on your client work? Do you have specialties that you love to work in, different areas and ways to help people with your practice?
I do. I'm mostly a generalist, but I would say that some of the things that I tend to work with the most often tend to be digestive health. That's a big area that I think herbalism tends to really shine in supporting people with. And I also do a lot with just like day-to-day nervous system stuff. So when people are feeling a little bit anxious, I'd say anxiety and insomnia are things that I tend to see a lot in my practice, and also things that I have personally had to deal with and continue to, you know, it's some of my taskmasters personally. Yeah. And so that is definitely a key area that I tend to work with. And a lot of my clients come in with those concerns and reproductive hormone balance. I'm willing to work with anybody with any body and any gender. But I'd say that probably my most experience and understanding comes from working with cis women. So I have a lot of middle-aged cis women who are going through perimenopause and menopause, or they're just going through like kind of raging PMS sort of things. And so that's another area that I do love to work with. And the herbs do tend to be really supportive alongside, of course, as always, those bigger picture diet, lifestyle, movement, stress management, life management, all those other things that go into our well-being. It's never just about taking herbs, but those I'd say would be some of the biggies: thyroid support, particularly the folks who are dealing with more the subclinical and the hypothyroid. Mm-hmm. That those things tend to all come together pretty frequently.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot more folks who are dealing with weird stuff popping up post COVID. And so I'm still rapidly trying to learn as much as I can, but more and more folks are coming through the door just feeling pretty strung out and depleted after these last few years, whether it's from the stress or from illness. That's definitely been an area of focus.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I have classes.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear about those.
So I have the Becoming an Herbalist class. That's sort of like an intro teaser class. We're going to spend 2 to 3 hours talking about, you know, because as I'm sure you get, I think we talked about this earlier, that people will just contact us out of the blue and say, like, I want to become an herbalist. I want to help people. I want to go to herb school. Like, what do I need to do? Can I make a living? Mm-hmm. What's the story here? And so I thought, I should really just do a whole class on this and make it a little bit more open, that it's something that's accessible to everybody. And so we have that coming up on April 13th, and the recording will be available afterwards. So if somebody happens to hear this afterwards, they can still catch the on-demand class. And for those folks who catch it live, any registration money will go towards the Northeast Farmers of Color Land Trust as a way to support community and support access to food and herbs. And then from there, the advanced series will be beginning. And that's for folks who already have a really strong background in herbs and body systems. A lot of the same topics that get covered in Body Into Balance. Mm-hmm. We assume you know that, and then jump into a bunch of additional topics, particularly geared towards folks thinking of working towards clinical herbalism, but also other types of herbalism paths too. And then in the summer, my foundational home herbalist series begins. And so that will be all happening via live stream. And I have an in-person student group, and they're also available on demand as well.
Awesome. That's so much goodness you're putting out into the world. I love it. That is fantastic. So if somebody wants to work with you or wants to buy your book or wants to be a student with you, how do they find you?
They can go on my website, wintergreenbotanicals.com is probably the best place to get all sorts of information about what I'm up to. But also if you go under the Learn More tab, there's just a ton of free information and you can catch videos and podcasts and blogs and virtual herb walks and all that good stuff. If you just want to start getting a feel for my teaching style. And, but I am also on Instagram at Maria Noelle Groves. I do have a YouTube page, which only has a smattering of videos because most of my video content is for registered students, but you can catch some freebies up there on Maria Noelle Groves on YouTube. And then I have a Facebook page, which is Wintergreen Botanicals. So those are definitely the key ways. I have a newsletter that goes out every month. And so you can sign up for that pretty much anywhere, I think, but especially on the website, you can, there's a sign up there. So yeah. So thank you. And I'm curious too, while you're here with me, because I'm still learning about some of the offerings that you have. Yeah. What kinds of offerings do you offer?
I have a couple of programs online. I do Apothecary Mama. So it's an online herbal mentorship to help moms learn how to use plants as medicine in a safe and effective way where they don't have to deal with all of the overwhelm of searching Dr. Google or wondering if this herb is safe for their kids or not. So that's a lot of fun. Jennifer's in that program with me. And then I do a Medicine Making Mamas program. So I teach moms both the folk methods and more scientific methods to learning how to make plant medicine. And I give them like the superpower hero of being able to make herbal medicine that tastes great. Because kids can be very, very picky. And if they're not going to take the herbs, as you know, the herbs don't work. And yeah, so that's kind of what I love to do with mamas. And then I host this podcast. I have a smattering of YouTube videos that will be more prevalent coming soon. And yeah, I nerd out on herbs to the maximum.
That is awesome. And what a great service because, you know, they're really, I was talking with one of my students who was had just recently had a baby and she was lamenting that, of course, there are some great resources out there that a lot of folks know about, but there really aren't a lot of resources for folks who are looking to work with herbs and get even keeled advice that's not too panicky or too laid back, but especially not too panicky. Yeah. And I've heard really great things about your classes from Jennifer.
Thanks.
So thank you for offering.
Oh my gosh, I love it so much. Like it just feels really great to share that information and to help so many moms and to help them learn about other great teachers too, because I do bring in amazing guest teachers for them because it is so important to learn this beautiful art and science from so many different people. It's a blast. But I think I decided to create it just because when I was young in my motherhood journey, I'm a fairly older mother, but I just remember looking on the natural mom forums and things like that. And there would be a mom that's like, oh my gosh, this is happening with my child. And then there's a long 150 comment thread with everybody saying, do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. And then none of them have a healthcare background. And that mom is then spun down that Google rabbit hole forever, just wondering if she chose the right thing. And that's stressful. So, yeah.
It's definitely an area that I don't feel super, you know, I know basic stuff, but I don't have a lot of training in it. And then also I don't have kids in my life. So I feel like it's something I haven't had a chance to really feel. I always want to come from a point of experience and really kind of knowing the plants. And I don't have that. So I love to be able to refer to other people for those kinds of skill sets.
Well, thank you. That's beautiful. Nobody ever asks me what I do on my own podcast. So I was like, wow, she really is a journalist. I love that. Hey, Maria, if you had one more just amazing piece of wisdom from your vast toolbox for people listening to this show that are just really curious about using plant medicine and doing that with their families, what would you say?
Oh, there's so many great ways to get connected with the plants. It is great to have a nice resource, so whether it's one of my books or some other books. There are a lot of great free websites out there as well. And I have some of them listed on my website on the links page. But get, you know, have some resources on hand that you can trust and then find one plant find one plant that you're drawn to that's accessible to you. It might be something in your garden, something culinary, or just a plant that keeps coming back to you. Maybe it's something from your ancestry that calls to you, or maybe it's from your bioregion that calls to you, and dig into it and get like dig into it metaphorically, not necessarily as long as it's sustainable to be harvesting and you know how to identify it, but start to learn about it, start to experience it, start with one herb at a time. You don't need to know every herb that exists. You really just need to know the one that's in front of you and get to see how it feels in your body and what those messages are that however you choose to connect with that plant. And then you can just build from there. But I think it can be so overwhelming because, you know, so many of us give so much content, and I'm definitely an overdoer, oversharer. And it's just like, oh my goodness, how could I ever know all these things about plants? And we'll never know everything there is about plants. That's the beauty of them. Mm-hmm. But we don't have to. You can start small and just kind of keep building based on especially working with those plants that really speak to you and resonate in your own body. So that would be my suggestion for where to start.
That is a beautiful piece of wisdom. Thank you so much. Like it can be quickly overwhelming, and that is the beauty and also for some, the curse. And I love what you had to say is that you'll never know all of the herbs and you'll never know everything about it. I think that's one of the things that has made me fall so deeply in love with this subject is that I will never be bored. In fact, one of my most commonly used plants and studied and loved plants, something as simple as plantain, just last night, one of my students was like, I used it for this and it was amazing. And, you know, I was like, thank you for teaching me again the wonders of one of my favorite plants. Like, yeah. So
plantain is a good one. That is an amazing plant.
It's so amazing. It really is. I almost have that tagline of like, when in doubt, plantain, but you know.
Yes, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really great. So thank you so much, Maria. This has been really, really fun. It's been an honor, and I'm so grateful that you shared so much with me and with the listeners today.
Awesome. And thank you so much. And thank you for all the good that you put out into the world with all the different things that you do and all the different ways that you connect and teach people about herbs. So thank you.
Thank you. I love it so much. So it's great to connect with somebody who's got an equal amount of giddiness and love and passion for this work. So thank you. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of The Herbalist Path. Being on this journey with you is absolutely incredible. If you dig this episode, please leave me a review on your favorite podcast player and share it with your friends so that together we can make herbalism hashtag spread like wildflowers. On another note, I must mention that while I know you're getting some good info here, it's important to remember that this podcast is purely for entertainment and educational purposes and is not intended to be a substitute for medical treatment. While the information in this podcast is absolutely relevant, herbs work differently for each person and each condition. That's why I recommend you work with a qualified practitioner, whether that be another herbalist, a naturopath, or your doctor. So thank you again. I am truly honored that you're tuning into these episodes and on the path with me to make sure that there's an herbalist in every home again. Don't forget to share this episode with your friends so that we can make herbalism hashtag spread like wildflowers. I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
Medicinal mushrooms are all the rage these days, if you didn't know already. And with great reason, because they are powerful medicine that can improve your health and your life in so many different ways. When they're well made. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of stuff on the market that isn't going to be so effective. And that's why you need to find a brand that you can actually trust. For me, that brand is Whole Sun Wellness. And this is the creation of a brilliant woman and fellow mama, Jamie Bonfiglio. She's an international mushroom educator that has been working in the medicinal mushroom industry for years. And this is when she saw firsthand how many other companies take shortcuts when it comes to their products. And Jamie wasn't having it. She set out to build her company the right way. Whole Sun Wellness is here to raise the industry standards so those crap mushrooms on the market aren't getting into your body or your family's body. Whole Sun Wellness is the first company to test and report nutritional facts for all of their extracts. They go beyond industry standards every step of the way, from sourcing to extraction and final testing. And as the owners of the largest medicinal mushroom farm in the United States, Whole Sun Wellness is taking control of their supply chain for the highest quality and absolute full transparency. They're even the first company to include pure mycelium extract in every single product. So when you're thinking of getting medicinal mushrooms for you and your family, Whole Sun Wellness is exactly the ones you want. Also, be sure to check out their new Mycolites. These are the world's first dissolvable electrolyte tablets. They're featuring functional mushroom extracts that'll give you more energy, more stamina, and recovery as well. And who couldn't use all of that? The other thing is, they are these adorable little mushroom-shaped tablets, and they come in like a little Altoids box, but way cooler than Altoids, because they're Mycolites. Anyways, head to wholesunwellness.com to grab yourself some Mycolites and all of the other functional medicinal mushrooms that you and your family need. And of course, you can grab that link right here in the show notes now.